Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining our Bible study this morning. We're recording from the North Star Cottage in New Jersey, and we welcome you all. And our moderator today is Thomas from New York, but I believe he's in Wisconsin, right? Anyway.
That's right.
He's here.
And lucky I called in.
Lucky you.
I get the time difference confused.
lucky for us.
Okay, so we'll start out with a poem by Carol Norton. Each life has its silent sorrow. All grief, its bright tomorrow. Each home, its unseen heavy cross. Each heart, its plenty after loss. Each day, its promise rich. Then rise, my heart, to levels high. Though days seem dark, thy God is nigh. His brooding love is over all, and held by him, I cannot fall. Then to the winds I cast my fears, and looking to the eternal years, I leave the dreamland of the past, and rising heavenward sure and fast, to heights of sinlessness attain, and thus my paradise regain. So this is a poem titled Fear Not, Trust and Be Undismayed, from a book of poems and verses by Carol Norton.
Thank you.
That's beautiful. Yeah. And beautifully read, Tom. Thank you. Wow, very, very touching.
This is amazing. Tom, you know about books I never knew even existed, including this one. So. Thank you for finding out these poems by Carol Norton and sharing them with us.
Oh, thank you for that. And also, just as I was looking at our library catalog, and we only have the online version. So I just saw on eBay the book in excellent condition for $17.50, our best offer. So we may have a hard copy soon.
Good.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, you're finding wonderful things in that. Yumi is beautiful, too. Thank you. Beautiful copy of it.
We do have the original pamphlet that he wrote about women.
Oh, good. Outstanding.
That's nice.
Well, I have a lot about him. I don't know if you want to go into that, but.
Go ahead, please.
All right. Well, Carrie sent me some things, and I also found some things, but. He was related to Henry Wadsworth Longfellow and Samuel Longfellow, who they were brothers. And in that book of poems, I guess it's Samuel Longfellow wrote a little introduction to it, a beautiful introduction called A Motif. It starts out, "Tell me not in mournful numbers, life is but an empty dream. For the soul is dead that slumbers, and things are not what they seem." It goes on, but it's very beautiful. And anyway, I thought that was interesting. And then his life, he was healed after one treatment of, I guess, a very serious problem. His parents had died when he was young, and he lived with his aunt and uncle. And anyway, after that healing, he devoted his whole life to Christian Science. And it was said he was in the class, Mrs. Eddy's last class of 1898. And Sue Harper Mims described her fellow students. There were lawyers, physicians, judges, businessmen, and what was to me the most beautiful of all, several young men who had given up every kind of business occupation just to become Christian Scientists. And then the sweetest thing to me was to see those young men just leaving all for Christ. And that certainly was Carol Norton. And he was an assistant to Augusta Stetson. He was involved with Augusta Stetson. He was a second reader at the First Church of Christ Scientist in New York City. But then, from what I read in a Daystar article, Mrs. Eddy kind of urged him not to have such close association with her. She seemed to be kind of dominating him in some ways. And he was a very, very precious student. So Mrs. Eddy kind of took him under her wing, and he wrote wonderful things, including a lot of about the womanhood. And that was very important in those days. The women didn't even have the ability to vote then. And he certainly saw Mrs. Eddy well and beautifully. And anyway, I'll quote some of those things too. But he married an Elizabeth Norton, another good worker in Christian Science who was taught by Bicknell Young. And then maybe some of you know this. Unfortunately, at an early age, he was hit by a trolley car and in Chicago where they were living. And the people in Chicago wanted Mrs. Eddy to know, but one of Mrs. Eddy's trusted workers who was following what he thought her decree was, not to disturb her with healing work or anything like that. She was busy doing world work. And so this trusted worker just said, no, we weren't going to tell her about it. And he passed on a few days later. When she did find out about it, she was heartbroken. It said she just cried copiously because he was such a loving and good worker and meant so much to Mrs. Eddy. And there's a beautiful story when Elizabeth Norton went to see Mrs. Eddy after the passing of her husband, Carol. It says, on entering the room, Mrs. Eddy extended her hand and asked me to be seated. I walked across the room and sat down in a chair. Mrs. Eddy very deliberately arranged her dress and sat down on a sofa. She looked at me so tenderly, and patting the sofa beside herself, she said, "You are too far away from Mother, darling." I immediately went to her. She took me in her arms and kissed me. She was not afraid to express her love humanly, and I did not mistake it, for I learned then and there that divine love must be expressed humanly in order to heal the brokenhearted. And he wrote many poems and articles, and I think, you know, the poem that Tom read so beautifully, it really sort of speaks to his life, doesn't it?
Yes.
And then there's something I think I'll have Bruce read that he wrote, which shows his character. It was called My Life Model.
My life model. To be honest and frank, but never brusque or unfeeling. To be childlike in thought and artless in all human association. To possess the discerning wisdom and moderation of a pure heart. To wear in the strength of selflessness the jeweled crown of philanthropy. Unselfish love, constancy, friendship, and enduring faith. To love my fellows, bond and free, sinner as well as righteous, with forgiving affection. To be wherever human need is greatest, walking always in the white light of the compassionate love that heals pain, disease, and sin with equal power. To gain real wisdom from babes and birds, youth and age. To perceive the greatness of small things. To be perpetually grateful to God and His created man. To see in nature the illumined countenance of the great love God. To surrender in full to the ideal good in all things, to emulate always the manhood of Christ Jesus, and ever set the compass of daily life by the North Star of womanhood revealed through the Revelator of Christian Science, to recognize in man and woman the super sensual and immortal image of the eternal us, the one God, to find the kingdom of heaven within. This is to be my prayer and perpetual quest. These aspirations constitute my life model, my only ideal. Carol Norton, CSD.
Wow.
And I'd just like to end with something he said about ideal womanhood. Mrs. Eddy is without doubt the greatest religious reformer of the 19th century and the greatest woman leader in the history of religion. To know her is to love her. Thousands upon thousands of men and women and children offer up a perpetual psalm of thanksgiving to the eternal good for the great good that has come to humanity through the career of this God-governed woman. And it said he would speak to thousands in his lectures. He was very, very much beloved. So thank you for introducing him, Tom.
Yeah, speaking to thousands, he gave a lecture at Carnegie Hall and spoke to 3,000 people.
Yes. Yes, and I think that was one place he asked how many have been healed in Christian Science, and like a third of the audience raised their hand and everyone was clapping, and quite the dedicated worker. And that legacy lives on, we'll know that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, anyone who wants to know, a really complete history of him, you can Google him, and Daystar particularly. Daystar's a library in Oklahoma City, and they said they have a lot of things about him. They seem to know him. I think you've been there, right, Tom?
No, I haven't. I just looked at their website. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, go ahead if you have any more.
A couple things. This is my little aside, but, he was writing and publishing not through the Christian Science Publishing Society. I mean, he did publish a lot through the Christian Science Publishing Society, but he also published outside that while Mary Baker Eddy was alive. So let's not forget that. So she didn't seem to think there was anything wrong with members of her church publishing books.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Very, very important point made there. Thank you.
So, and just as an add on to that, a guy named William Walter, he was a very good Christian Scientist. And after Mary Baker Eddy died, he was a practitioner. He said he had to leave because he was told he couldn't publish any books anymore. So,
over and over. Jeremy?
Yeah, that's it. 10 years later, he would have got excommunicated. I know that's what happened to a lot of people. Like Kratzer.
Right.
So. Mm-hmm. So then my second point was, I didn't find this poem easy to understand. So others may have, but, for me, it takes a while. I had to read this through a number of times, think about some things. And it's a simple message, I believe, but, I think this tells us about Carol Norton's abilities. Because I do think this is an awesome poem. And I'll just quote one line here, though, which says a lot to me about the poem is, though days seem dark, right? We seem to go through difficulties, let's say, thy God is nigh. So God is always present. He's always present. So I kind of like this. It kind of made me think and trying to understand what he was trying to write. But again, I think the message is pretty straightforward.
No, I think it's a very simple but very important message, because I think the other statement that I think is key to what he's getting across here is, then to the winds I cast my fears. The title of this is not. There's a lot to be afraid if you're if you want to be afraid of what's going on in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, if you forget that, Jesus said, the quote is, I'll be with you always. Always. It's all the time. Every time. So to me, that's important.
And he reassured a lot of the people that he healed to fear not. Mm-hmm. He recognized fear grips everybody if it can.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the things that was revealed to me soon after I got to the Plainfield Church and started working with Mrs. Evans was how much fear I actually had. And I didn't even know it.
I think that's why it says that the chief procurer of all evil conditions is fear.
Thank you. Yeah, right. Thank you. Yeah, fear can drive a person, and it's been so part of your life, you don't know it. As Gary said, it's mm-hmm. very good to get it out and get it healed with this.
Well, it's evident that Mr. Norton had the capacity to reach people. Because, you know, there's some statements in here. Each life has a silent sorrow. Each home is unseen heavy cross. Mm-hmm. Are we going to pretend those conditions don't exist? Well, you know, sometimes you got to reach people where they are. Now, obviously, there is an answer for all these things. Yeah, we do have problems to contend with, but there are answers for them. There are resolutions for circumstances. But to start off with like some positive, absolute statement and be inconsiderate or possibly totally insensitive about what somebody else is going through is not Christian Science. It's not Christly. So these things need to be addressed. We just can't ignore them and pretend that they're not there.
Yeah, and how many times, you know, have you known someone or you felt they had such an ideal life and then you find out not? So heavy is the weight of ill in every heart, and comforters are needed much of Christ-like touch.
Yes, and look at how Mrs. Eddy dealt with Mrs. Norton. She didn't say, go home, you're fine. She dealt with her lovingly.
Yes, yeah, it was such a beautiful example. It brought tears to my eyes of her love. And she understood it because she suffered so many losses in this material world, right? Right?
Or right. Yes.
Her first husband, her mother, her son.
Her family. They cut themselves off from her.
Yes.
Yeah. Really.
She went through years of weakness and ill health until she discovered Christian Science.
Yes.
At which point in time, she said she enjoyed health like she never had before. Which gives in one of her poems, loss is gain. That's in one of her poems. It's in our hymnal.
Yes.
So,
well, and he had the right concept of God, as you read. Thy God is nigh. Well, that means God is all. And he had a right concept of that. And that is how we dissipate the fear, destroy the fear. That is how we learn to trust. That is what we learn to become undismayed. So he was a very clear and strong metaphysician, one of the good early workers.
Okay. So, yeah.
No, go ahead. Move on.
No, I thought we'd continue on with our questions. So.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so our topic today is trust, and our text is John chapter 11. Being taken from our lesson this week. So our first question is, where is Bethany? What is the significance of Bethany in the life of Jesus?
I'd like to take this one, or at least part of it. I found a good source on the internet. Bethany was a village in Judea about 2 miles east of Jerusalem. I didn't realize it was that close. A distance considered a Sabbath day's journey. Bethany was situated on a well-traveled road to Jericho. And some people think, scholars think that it was kind of like a modern subdivision or neighborhood rather than an entire town. The edges of Bethany reached to the Mount of Olives and also bordered Bethpage, a suburb of Jerusalem. To Bethany, to answer about what the part about how it related to Jesus, is probably best known for being the hometown of Jesus' good friends, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Bethany was the place where Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead in our lesson. It was the home of Simon the leper, and it was the place where Mary anointed Jesus' feet with perfume. Other references to Bethany describe preparations for Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem, cursing the fig tree, and the place where he stayed overnight during his final week of earthly ministry, between his triumphal entry and his crucifixion. It also is significant as a place near which Christ descended back into heaven 40 days after his resurrection. He gathered his disciples to give them final instructions before he left the earth and took them to the Mount of Olives in the vicinity of Bethany, where he blessed them and commissioned them. And then was lifted, was then ascended. So they had a couple other things in there, but I think that covers a lot of stuff regarding Bethany.
Thank you.
And that was awesome. Thank you. Okay. Anybody else want to add on Bethany?
Well, it was pretty comprehensive.
That's pretty, very comprehensive. Thank you so much. Okay. Yes.
You're still welcome.
Okay. So question number two. And I hope you don't mind, the questions this time seems to be designed towards us, or designed towards questions we think about as Christian Scientists, right? So, okay. How should we speak of problems? So from John chapter 11, verse 11, these things said he, and after that he saith unto them, our friend Lazarus sleepeth, but I go that I may awake him out of sleep. So how should we speak of problems?
As illusion. Nothing is insurmountable. Right?
A seeming illusion?
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a joke.
Yeah, a problem is the appearance of something that is not seen correctly. It's also an opportunity to learn something more about God.
Don't make it a reality. Do not look at the problem and be fixed on the problem. We are to look through the problem to the almighty, unchanging power that is present all the time. Nothing is impossible to God. He opened the Red Sea. You know, he fed the water, came out of the rock. He fed 5,000. So, yeah, we have to remember all that. The almightiness of God, omnipotence.
Yeah, Materia Medica can give names, you know, these fancy names, and then people are afraid of them, afraid of it. And Kimball says, well, what, you know, what if they told you you had pink feathers? Try it in its place. But another thing to consider is your audience you're talking to, because these testimonies that say I had a seeming belief of some illusion or something. You know, people don't think you have a problem and they wonder, what in the heck are you saying? In an article Carrie sent, speaking of Jesus, said even when he addressed them in their material sense of the situation, he never moved from his absolute position of knowing God is eternal life. So I guess that is how you do it. You can speak to a person and, you know, let them know you've got a problem, but or they can let you know without using all these words that sound like you don't have a problem, but never coming down from your absolute state of knowing there is no problem. And that story of Mrs. Eddy, when someone came into her study, obviously with a cold, and Mrs. Eddy inquired about her, and what the woman said, she was just fine, mother. And what happened?
She said she should say the truth or something.
Yeah, say the truth.
The lie.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she rebuked it because, and sometimes people will ask you if you look like you're not doing too well, if everything is all right, and you say, oh, I'm just fine. It's probably better just to say you're working through something right now or something like that. Otherwise, people think you're just oblivious, you know, and that's how Christian Scientists get that name of being
otherworldly.
Yeah.
Or ignoring things.
Right, ignoring.
Yeah, irresponsible.
Being irresponsible. Yeah,
exactly, irresponsible.
And they stop trusting you.
Stop trusting you, Chardell said.
Yeah.
Right.
Actually, they start shunning you and ignoring you.
Hmm.
Who wants to have anything to do with that weirdo?
Exactly. Anybody else on that?
Anybody want to talk through how Jesus talked about Lazarus sleeping? I think it's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So, you know, in verse 12, then said his disciples, Lord, if he sleep, he shall do well. Howbeit Jesus spake of his death, but they thought that he had spoken of taking of rest and sleep. Then said Jesus unto them plainly, Lazarus is dead.
There we are.
So okay. We don't have to make something of nothing, right? But we don't have to fear nothing, right?
We have to see it as nothing, right? We have to see it as nothing, but we do not have to, if depending on the audience, as you say, Mary, you do not have to say certain things that will make somebody think that you are irresponsible. But
yes.
You surely do not make a reality of it.
Thank you.
Well, that's a good point, because he did not rebuke his disciples, or he did not say, yeah, he's doing all right. He's just having a rest, right?
Mm-hmm.
No. To the human picture, he died. But he was teaching his disciples a lesson, wasn't he?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, everything he said was an object lesson. He was teaching all the time.
And what do we read Wednesday from the manual about giving a testimony, Bruce?
Don't go too hot and heavy into descriptions of suffering and symptoms.
But the generic name.
Generic name can be admitted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if you're not feeling well, what do you say? I'm not feeling well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now the problem is, don't stop there and just leave it there. That's not the end of the story. Like I said earlier, there is an answer. There is a resolution. And God most certainly is nigh to guide us to it.
And there's a testimony on the other side of it.
Yeah, we want to hear the healing. And Mrs. Eddy has said, I know in one place where she tells people not to speak in the absolute unless they proved it. That's pretty, you know, don't tell me there is no matter. and somewhat you proved it in some way. Yeah, right. Of course, well, she was
this,
telling people keep their feet on the ground.
Not be weird.
So this reminds me of a story I was told when I was a kid, so I have no idea whether it's true or not, but Mary Baker Eddy was teaching a class, and one of the people in the class, this woman was like, all speaking very spiritually minded and so forth, and like, everything's perfect, right? And so Mary Baker Eddy told her after class, look, tomorrow when you come here, I know you take the train, or maybe it was a trolley car. Just don't. I just want you to be here.
it sounds like something she would say, I think. She had a good sense of humor.
Yep, then I'll humble you real quick.
Oh, dear.
Okay. Yes.
Can I add something?
Please.
This is a very difficult topic for me, like how to voice things. Like, you want to be in the absolute, but if you're in the absolute, which I often did, people don't understand and you sound weird. And like, how to address if you have a problem you're working through, who do you tell, who don't you tell? And how do you speak about it or about problems of others? So I think it's not easy. And in every situation, we might have to find the way which is best by asking God how to do it, not to sound too spiritual and minded without, and the audience not understanding us, but also not making a big deal out of it, not enhancing it by talking too much about it. But it's not easy, I find.
It's not.
No.
I'm remembering, like, when I was a Christian Science nurse, you know, you're going in to dress a wound, and yet you cannot affix it to the patient. I mean, it takes prayer. You're right there, Michelle Gila. It's prayer before you enter that room. That's what I found.
Thank you. And you know what Nisha Ila was saying, every instance is different. There's no formula to this. It's prayer. How you deal with it. Ask God, and God will tell you the right way to address it or say. Main thing is to have it prayer in your heart. Thank you. Thank you both.
Yeah, and Jesus instructed his disciples the same way. He said, when you're, you know, taken in front of the king, or taken in front of the court or whatever, God will give you the words. You don't have to worry about it beforehand. And I think that's the key, as was said. Your consciousness has to be clear and strong and absolute. What you say to others, only God knows what they need, and he will tell you.
Speaks for you.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay, so question number 3. How do you maintain trust in God when there seems to be a delay? So from our reading, when he had heard, therefore, that he was sick, he, this is Jesus, abode 2 days still in the same place where he was. That's John 11, verse 6. So how do you maintain trust in God when there seems to be a delay?
Never forget, the problem is not with God. The problem is with myself.
Carrie sent me this good article called Making Haste Slowly. Really good points in here. You maintain trust by knowing there will be no harm in a delay. Mm-hmm. It's a human sense of things that would urge us to take some hasty action or give some human advice, so imposing limits on our demonstration. A delay doesn't change the fact that we always have been and always will be in the consciousness of love's all power and all presence. The claim of time and limitation will continue to thwart our spiritual progress until we demonstrate dominion over them. Mrs. Eddy gives the example of being in a poorly barricaded, fiercely besieged by the enemy, and asked if you would rush out to combat with the enemy, or would you pause and then wait on God? This is a paraphrase, to reveal the appropriate course of action, and then meet and overthrow the enemy at the right time and in the right way. So, and then that quote from Miscellaneous Writings, page 230, rushing around smartly is no proof of accomplishing much. And all through the Old Testament, we find notable instances of achievements made through calm and prayerful thought rather than through hurried action. And this mental attitude is what we all need to cultivate in order to reach that altitude of spiritual understanding, which enabled Christ Jesus to counteract and overcome every manifestation of evil with the simple truth. So,
I know from my experience, if the delay comes, it's like God is telling me, yo, dude, chill out and take a pause and reconnect with me, will you, please? And I've often thought of this prayer in Habakkuk, although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither the fruit tree be in the vine, the labor of the olive shall fail, the fields shall yield no meat, the flock shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herd in the stalls. Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation.
Thank you.
There's Habakkuk. It looked like everything was failing, but he took time out to sing praises to Almighty God. And maybe that was the thing that's required more than what you thought the expectation of your prayer should be. You know, God's got a better plan. And sometimes that's the problem when we're insisting on our own plans. You know, God's got a better way.
Or our own timeline.
True.
Yeah, and then get angry.
Or our own priorities, which are not right.
Is God ever late? No. Does he not have a perfect time? Yes, he always has a perfect time. But it seems, you know, like Jane said, are we going to allow patience to have its perfect work? So God knows best what time. I mean, look at how long Abraham and Sarah had to wait before Isaac was born.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, there's many, many demonstrations in the Bible, and often the Psalms, waiting on the Lord. And sometimes if you hear something untoward, your first reaction is to run. Oh, my gosh. Ooh, I've got a little. And there's no God in that, is there? And it is. It's a very important point in this story about Lazarus that Jesus waited how many days before he even left?
2 days before he left. 2 days to get there. So he had been in the tomb for 4 days.
4 days.
Mm-hmm. But he knew clearly there was nothing to heal. He hadn't died. He knew that. So what's the rush?
And well, Matthew Henry. Oh, sorry.
Well, just on that point, the human belief at the time was that, you know, if a person passes, they can be revived within 3 days, you know, sometimes. But after 3 days, it was impossible. That was the human belief at the time.
Yeah, there was that cultural superstition that on the fourth day, then he's really dead.
really dead.
This kind of.
And also in Matthew Henry's Bible commentary, he adds the thought that Jesus was doing, through his love for Lazarus and Mary and Martha, he was giving them a better gift by waiting, because he had done many healings that were not quite as much as raising from the dead, but he was giving this to them and glorifying God.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you.
Well, we've heard and read, at least I have, many testimonies where people have prayed to God for a healing of something, and it seemed like it wasn't happening. But then they got to the point where they didn't care anymore whether they were healed. They just wanted to be closer to God and to know God. And once they got to that point of wanting nothing more than to be as close to God as they possibly could, that is when the healing came.
Yes. Yeah.
So our motive matters a lot.
I think really too, what you describe is when you really surrender to the power of God to operate.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And when you want it to be what God made.
Yeah.
To be who and what you really are, that is when you realize the harmony associated with it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what will you do once you're made whole? Are you going to just enjoy matter at a higher level?
Go back to your slop.
Go back.
Only one came back to give thanks and find out about the science. If you've truly been healed, you cannot do that. But you see what has happened in many instances in the movement is people have just gotten comfortable with their healings. Mm-hmm. And no, it's just what was said before. You have to consecrate your life to God, give your life to God. He gave you life. He owns you. We could do no other, really. And if we don't, we usually are hitting our head against the pricks.
Mm-hmm. Kicking against the pricks. That's something Jesus said, because pricks were something that they put on the cart to keep the horses in line and keep them going straight and not wandering off somewhere else. Huh. So those pricks serve purpose.
Well, I didn't know that. Thank you. It was brambly prick or something.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to mention something that's similar to a delay. Sometimes we're praying for something to happen. You know, maybe it's you're applying to a school to get into, or you're applying to a job, or you're trying to set up a meeting with someone, right? And then it doesn't happen. You know, a lot of times it doesn't happen for a very good reason. You were saved from some issue that might have happened down the road. So you were protected in that.
Thank you. It's very, very true.
All the time you're protected, really. It's all the time, I feel, what's happening. Yeah. There's a reason.
There's a reason. Sometimes you don't know why. Maybe you'll never know why, but there was a reason. Thank you, Tom. Good point.
Okay. So we talked about delays. Now, question four. And I know Linda said she was interested in this, so I'm sure she has some thoughts on this. So number four, is a healing ever beyond hope? So from our reading, Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead 4 days. It's John chapter 11, verse 39. So is a healing ever beyond hope?
And remember, general human belief at the time was 4 days is beyond hope.
That's right. Being dead then.
4 days, you're really dead.
So it had become a human law, so to speak.
And I guess the hardened sinner would be beyond hope, wouldn't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Everlasting punishment.
Mm-hmm. And yet it says that there is no incurable disease. There is no such thing as too late. This is from the Blue Book. Yeah. So.
Thank you, because I wanted that quote, and then Imogen in her watch message today, there is no fatal mistake, there is no unforgivable wrong,
there's
no unpardonable sin, there's no injury, there is no incurable disease, and there is no such thing as too late. Thank you. And that's Watches, Prayers, and Arguments, the Blue Book, I guess, as well.
Blue Book 205, page 205.
That has given much encouragement to people. I know that statement. And all you have to do, read A Century of Christian Science Healing, read Fruitage and Science and Health, over and over, things that were considered incurable have been healed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And our, that's why we have Wednesday night testimony meetings.
But the secret is to touch the patient with love?
What was that?
But the secret is to, if you touch the patient with love.
Yes, right, right. Yes, the secret is to touch and according to their receptivity.
Yeah.
Yeah, receptive to divine love, too.
Yes, and science and health. Mm-hmm.
Yes, because that makes very much sense, because Lazarus had to be receptive also. And we know that he was, because he provided a home where Jesus felt comfortable and came to for rest and peace and comfort.
Yes.
I would like to share something under in that sense, because I think that speaks also to the receptivity. But it was I took some words out of a commentary about Bethany that I thought were so beautiful. It says, Bethany is what every Christian home should be, a place where Christ is always welcome, where talking to God seems normal, where we invite Jesus into our daily lives, our work, and our hearts, and that he would feel at home. We should create Bethany moments, like sitting at his feet and listening to his words and taking a few moments silent prayer amidst the busyness of the day and appreciating the beauty of nature and praising God. It's not adding more to our day, but it's infusing the day with the sense of God's presence and turning our daily tasks into acts of love and service to God.
Wow, that's beautiful.
I took out the concept they were teaching and put it together.
From where?
It was a website called St. Joe's Maria Institute.
That's very beautiful. Yeah, and another article from Carrie, it's written, this is called Truth Solves All Problems. To know that time has nothing to do with life, that it neither weakens nor strengthens the power of truth. This hastens the healing, and the process becomes shorter. And then every belief in something separate from God is a stone to be rolled away from human consciousness. Mm-hmm. And the false sense of time in connection with our work is a great stone. Sometimes this is the first thing we should remove, to know that time has nothing to do with life, that it neither weakens nor strengthens the power of truth. This hastens the healing and the process becomes shorter. It is never too late to do good or to rise and to be saved if we take with us the Christ in the place where mortal belief says our dearest hope is buried. Every condition of mortal mind, every erroneous belief is destroyed by the demands of truth at some time and in some way. So, and then, you know, that's true. You're going to have to work this problem out sometime in some way. Why not do it here and now rather than keep putting it off or even thinking tomorrow will be better? Today is the day of salvation. And yes, nothing is gone too long or is too late. God can heal it all. It was never true in the first place. It had history, no presence and no future. It's just a false belief.
And Mrs. Eddy said, this is not, now is not the time to prepare for a future salvation. Now is the time to, paraphrase, to experience it.
Right. That's a good time. This is encouraging, isn't it? Now is the time. So if we remember this in any situation, it can lift us up.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And this was a sort of a healing that Carrie sent. Professor Herman S. Herring, who was a famous lecturer and teacher, I suppose, he spoke at a huge audience, and he was introduced by a Forrest A. Heath, who said, in part, "The first time my attention was seriously called to Christian Science was about 9 years ago, when I received word from home that my mother, who had been an invalid for 17 years, was going to try as a last resort the application of Christian Science. I distinctly recall the shock it gave me, the feeling that she was indeed beyond hope of recovery when there was nothing but Christian Science for her to turn to. Her condition was the result of blood poisoning following a vaccination, according to each of the many physicians consulted. That's what they thought. There were operations and long periods of helplessness, and each physician in turn gave up the case. I had occasion a few months later to go to the home of my parents and see what had occurred. But instead of the dull look, the chalky cheeks, the spiritless gait of the years of misery and suffering, there were instead bright eyes, a hopeful countenance, and the glow of returning health. Such a look as one wants to see on one's mother's face." Mm-hmm. That's the hope. And the hope is often what inspires the healing. When you first read Science and Health and realize you're not doomed, a doomed mortal to a miserable life, but God loves you. And that is the book that Thomas found called Talitha Kumi, about a little girl who thought, you know, she had all these beautiful sisters, but she was the one who was crooked and sick, and everyone was so sorry for this poor, pitiful girl. And then she met a Christian Scientist, and her whole life changed. So don't ever be shy about giving out that book or saying a word of encouragement. Nothing is hopeless. This child was obviously born with the problem. But Christian Science healed her, as it did Doris Henty of a deformed faith, and many, many others, when it was said it was too late, incurable, no hope. Bushwa. Thomas?
Well, I think this was... I don't know. For me, I think this was a wonderful discussion today. Talking about very basic things like how do we speak of problems? You know, what if there seems to be a delay? Are things beyond hope, right? I mean, these are kind of things we go through every day. And I kind of like the way that Carol Norton's poem kind of encapsulates a lot of this, right? Each life has its silent sorrow, but... you know, it talks about paradise regained, right? So I leave the dreamland of the past, You know, God was always there. So despite some darkness, God is still present and the light is still here.
Yeah. Oh. Yes, and I like the fact that paradise was not gained, but it was regained. He realized that it was always there.
Yeah, you know, sorry to interrupt, but Gary, that's exactly why I picked this poem. If the last sentence had said, "Thus my paradise gained," I probably wouldn't have picked this poem. It really was that word.
Yep. Well, and that is the source of all hope, isn't there? Isn't it?
Yeah, it was such a perfect poem for this. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Really perfect. Thank you.
May I share something?
Please.
Before we stop? This is from Mrs. Eddy in Science and Health, 493 it starts. Excuse me. If Jesus awakened Lazarus from the dream and revealed death, this proves that the Christ could improve on a false sense. Who dares to doubt the communicative test of the power and willingness of divine mind to hold man forever intact in his perfect state and to govern man's entire action? Jesus said, "Destroy this temple or body, and in 3 days, mind will raise it up." And he did this for tired humanity's reassurance.
Thank you.
This is Eddie.
Very good. Anyone else, please? Bruce. People tell me after it's over, oh, I had this to say or I had that to say. Well, please say it now.
Yeah, I have done that before, yes.
Yeah. I wanted to say thank you to Tom, because I think these were very courageous questions.
Mm. Oh, thank you.
It's certainly questions that have bothered me for a long time. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes.
Well, I found the people that have been most helpful are the ones that have been honest about all the issues that they had to contend with and problems they've faced, but found a resolution and an answer. Mm-hmm. And the ones, in my opinion, have been the least helpful that always put on the appearance of having a perfect and problem-free life. Because almost always those people, once you really got to know them, there's a lot of unresolved things, and they kept their problems alive by not letting the light of day see them, tried to bury them or whatever, the form of dishonesty.
That's what the Pharisees were doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let it all hang out. Let it rip. Let it see the light of day.
And the light of truth.
There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Thomas.
Oh, yes. Thank you to everybody.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks for all you do.
Thank you. Have a blessed day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.